Tuesday, March 16, 2021. Patriotically Correct is on, broadcasting internationally live on Mojo 50 Radio, the seditious and rabble-rousing, truth-telling iHeartRadio monster. Live from the Cortez Wealth Management Studios, visit CortezWM.com for your America First retirement plan. Do business with a God-fearing patriot and independent fiduciary. Cortez Wealth Management, today on the program, we will check in with National Files senior reporter Patrick Howley for the Daily Intel Brief. And of course, in order to stay woke and avoid the daily accusations of me being a desensitized, white, privileged, violent, insurrectionist, and bigoted, misogynistic racist, I will talk with Edward Woodson, who's a former defense attorney, who will be here to opine on the George Floyd, not the George Floyd trial, I guess. It would be the Derek Chauvin trial. And so I think first we should address the critical race theory, because apparently I haven't been paying enough attention to the easily influenced, weak-minded sheep. As a result, there's been many hurt feelings, causing cry rooms and safe spaces to be over capacity at places like Columbia University. Have you read this? The school is planning to hold 6 additional graduation ceremonies for students according to their race and other aspects of how they identify. Is this the woke that everyone was looking for? Is this the unity that everyone was jumping up and down, ready to embark on some journey of solidarity and tolerance? Is this the killing of racism and the burial of our deep-seated and bigoted past that everyone was looking forward to after ridding of the racist orange man? The college has detailed on their public website, for everyone to view, details about the separate and segregated ceremonies for Native, Asian, Latin, and Black students taking place for the university. The final 2 ceremonies will, of course, be focused on the first generation and or low-income members of the community. And the final ceremony will be titled Lavender and will cater to the LGBTIAQ community. Perfect. Perfect. Racism and stereotypes will be rid of completely, all thanks to the efforts of the imbecilic, elitist thinking, woke idiots at Columbia University, and a lot of them others that are like it, who are illustrating for all of us what we already knew to be true. Liberal thinking is the most divisive and most racist thinking of our society, and they're proving it right out in the wide open. So what's next? Are gays and trannies going to have to drink from separate fountains as we put Black students back to the rear of the bus and take voting rights maybe away from white folks due to an overabundance of historical privilege? It should be noted, though, that due to the health and safety concerns for all involved, the ceremonies will be hosted online, virtually, just to make certain that nobody's assaulted by intolerant and mean, violent Trump supporters, and that everyone is protected from the world-ending plague, known for its survivability rate in excess of 99%. I would assume that in the backdrop of most students appearing on their Zoom meeting in their masked-up environments, you'll see plenty of hand sanitizer and pictures of the families the students have left back home, told to stay away from for the rest of their lives as they re-inhale every poisonous chemical their body's designed to rid of as they breathe out and exhale. Maybe the events could be hosted by the incredibly racist Bill Burr, who we all know is covering as one of the most racist of all. I mean, he even went to the greatest lengths of anybody to cover for his racism by marrying a Black woman. Or is he trying to colonize her? Maybe he's just showing his masculinity and breeding a new-aged synthetic blend or brand of racist that will know their father only married a Black woman so that he could spend a lifetime imposing his white privilege down upon her as a slave. Maybe for help on this, rather than having Ed Woodson on the show today, I should look to a more authentic source for race articulation. A genuine look at what it feels like to be the victim of systemic racism. Maybe the expert I should be talking to would be somebody like Ibram Kendi. Kendi, if you don't know him, is the Black guy that frequently appears on nationally syndicated talk shows, known for being responsible with journalism and always bringing you the objective, hard-hitting truth. Places like CBS and the others, you know, the ones that have historically always brought you the news with little subjection, rarely forming an opinion or telling you how to think. Heavy sarcasm there, folks. Kendi is the real victim, who's been oppressed his entire life and due strictly to the color of his skin. He's really never had a fair shake. He's always been held back. He's been held back just like people like Tiger Woods, Michael Jackson, Aretha Franklin, 60% of the NFL, the majority of the NBA. These people making 20-some-odd million dollars throwing a football or shooting a basketball, you know, playing a kid's game. B.B. King, Aunt Jemima didn't exactly die broke. Al Roker, Steve Harvey, Gail King over at CBS. How about Don Lemon in his multi-million dollar home over at CNN? Maxine Waters, I think she's been elected to Congress several times. Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, Michael Jordan. Don't mention the man elected to the highest office in the world as president of the United States, Barack Obama, not once but twice. This just proving how being black is the absolute detriment and sole reason any person of color could never be anything great, right? So why the platform for Ibram Kendi? Why even get up on your soapbox every day ad nauseum on these shows that you're paid to appear on? Why inflict the unnecessary pain of doom and gloom to the students at the college you go to daily as a professor to educate the impressionable minds that are looking to advance their careers only to be subjected by your out-of-touch, insincere, and absolutely baseless claims of how systemic racism has killed so many blacks in our communities while you completely ignore the real problem of fatherless homes? Why, Ibram, if black people are doomed to a life of misery and mistreatment, are you even able to be there? Maybe because you're not what you claim to be. And you're the most inauthentic person the face of the planet has ever seen. Maybe have you told the story about how you were held back yourself? Have you told the story about how you had the misfortune of, just because of your blackness, you had both parents at home with careers, you lived a silver spoon life, you went to college, you never struggled for a single day ever? You're married and your wife is a doctor. You figured out that there's millions of dollars to be made out of self-victimization, something that was attempted by Jussie Smollett, but you're just a better actor, right? You went to some of the top schools in America. But you have the nerve to cry racism? You're an extremely privileged black dude. It gets on my nerves every time I see you lying when there's real victims in black communities dying at the hands of one another due to the lack of parental guidance by a strong-willed man of integrity, honor, values in the household on a daily basis. That's the real problem. Why don't you talk about that? Why don't you talk about real facts that more officers are killed every single year in this country than unarmed black men? Or how about that more unarmed whites are killed than unarmed blacks? Do facts even matter to someone that is supposed to be an educator at Boston College? Schools across the nation are using your books that you've written to educate and teach anti-racism in public schools so that educators can then in turn indoctrinate young white kids that they are the devil and ought to immediately repent, while you also tell young black kids that they don't have a chance in hell to ever be anything because of the white kid sitting across from them at the lunch table. You are a disgrace. You attended private schools from 3rd to 8th grade, Christian schools in Queens. Have you talked about that misfortune in front of everyone as you claim to be some heroic martyr for a black community that you pretend to have crawled out of barely? By the skin of your teeth, you escaped the ghetto. You've never struggled, not a day in your life. You were born in the Jamaica neighborhood of Queens. Your mother was a healthcare business analyst. Your father, a tax accountant. And both of your parents are now retired. Congratulations to them and their hard work. Living rather nicely as Methodist ministers now. You lived in Virginia for most of your school career, where you attended Stonewall Jackson High School and went on to receive dual BS degrees in African American Studies and magazine production from Florida A&M and a master's degree from Temple University. I wonder how you paid for that. You were a visiting scholar in the Department of Africana Studies at Brown University, and the only black college that you ever attended was FAMU. Your oppressed lifestyle due to racism has been what led to being published as the author of 5 books. And for being taken seriously when you published a proposal for a constitutional amendment in the United States to establish and fund the Department of Anti-Racism. That would explain the anti-racism but extremely racist comments that you've made about Supreme Court Justice Amy Coney Barrett when you said, quote, get that up here. Some white colonizers adopted black children. They civilized these savage children in the superior ways of white people while using them as props in pictures of denial, while cutting the biological parents of these children out of the picture of humanity, end quote. You criticized interracial adoption and labeled it as the ultimate racism. Never mind the fact that those children would have had no shot at becoming successful if not for this adoption? This introduction to a successful, generous home with loving parents, you know, similar to where you grew up. So forgive me, Kendi, if I don't take you seriously when you tell the world that educators need to take a look at themselves and convince themselves by admitting to themselves in the mirror that they're racist before even being allowed the opportunity to be in the same room with my kids for the majority of the duration of their everyday lives. I wouldn't be surprised if you haven't even ever been to Kenya. You're a liar. And you represent the picture of the enemy to anyone that ever lived a normal life where people were judged by the impartial eyes of good, God-loving Americans who don't see race, Kendi. You are a racist heathen, a travesty to the world of education, and the epitome of everything wrong with America today.
Attention, liberal snowflakes. Caught you listening again.
Well, you happen to have caught me in a moment of self-pleasure.
Stewie and Richie, the patriotically correct radio show, is on the Warrior Radio Network.
And make sure to find us on Mojo 50 Radio. That is the station that you search when you're looking at the powerful, exploding iHeart app. iHeart Radio broadcasting live Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, as well as on Rumble, YouTube, Twitter, Parler, and inside of Telegram. All the talk about the wokeness hasn't been limited to anything that we would be surprised about. Obviously, now infiltrating the military. Patrick Howley from the National File here to talk to us more about that. Patrick, good afternoon.
How are you, Stim?
I'm doing well. I'm vertical, and I guess that's about it. I don't want to say anything that might be offensive. You know, I don't want to offend anybody here today.
Yes, that doesn't sound like you at all.
Been working really hard on this, you know, because I'm a desensitized masculine alpha male who's embraced by my white privilege here, just broadcasting from this pedestal of greatness and patriotic violence. I'm an insurrectionist, I guess.
Well, the woke war between the United States military and talk show host Tucker Carlson continues. Tucker Carlson taking some shots, so to speak, at the U.S. military. Meanwhile, a Marine unit has apologized for going after Tucker, saying, quote, "We will adjust fire," after drawing controversy for telling Tucker Carlson on Twitter, quote, "Come back when you've served and been pregnant." Tucker Carlson, of course, generating outrage for criticizing the flight suits to be worn by pregnant pilots. Tucker has said, "If the Pentagon can show that pregnant pilots are the best, we will be the first to demand an entire Air Force of them." Here is what Tucker had to say to the military.
"It was quite an experience yesterday, being the very first target in the Pentagon's new Operation Silence the Talk Show Hosts. Friends called us in concern. Are you guys all right? And for a minute, we'll concede we were almost rattled. Then we realized if the woke generals treat us like they've treated the Taliban, we'll be fine. 20 years later, the Taliban are still here. Maybe we ought to promise the Pentagon that we'll get rid of traditional gender roles on this show, change the pronouns, defeat the patriarchy, and all that. Then they'd send us billions in unmarked $100 bills as a reward. They've certainly done that before. And that might really kickstart our struggling opium poppy business. Something to think about. Anyway, we're fine. So thank you for the concern."
Yeah. Who's next?
Well, the U.S. reportedly is consistently losing to China in war games. I guess the war games are just not factoring in all of the diversity points, because obviously diversity is our strength when it comes to military matters. And, you know, I think it's time that we start rolling out some new rules for the U.S. military. First of all, I think that Biden's lady generals should be able to name drones after Sex and the City characters, because I think it will mean more if Syrian children get bombed by a drone named Charlotte or Samantha. I think all references to "Sir, yes, sir," must be replaced by "Yes, Queen." Yes, Queen. I think that Chairman Xi should not be allowed to mess with the U.S. military until the troops have had their Starbucks and done their Pilates. And I think that all white men should be sent to Guantanamo Bay for hate speech. I think that these are fair things that will just level the playing field and make the United States military stronger. Because as we all know, as we're constantly reminded by the military itself, diversity and inclusive safe space culture is what really gives the U.S. military our strength. That's how we won World War II. It was our diversity that was storming the beaches of Normandy.
You know, is diversity and inclusion really what liberal woke leftists want, though? Or is it more segregation? Are we going back into the past? I mean, is regression the new progression? Look at Concordia University. They're going to have 6 different graduation ceremonies at that New York University because we have to separate everybody by their race, the color of their skin, their ethnicity, their religious preference, their political ideologies, and how they identify as far as their gender science or lack thereof.
Yes. Well, I think the smart thing to do is to separate yourself entirely from Columbia University and higher education in general. Meanwhile, in the military, in the Navy, for instance, the Navy reading list currently has books on it, including How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X. Kendi. And also Sexual Minorities in Politics is one of the book titles. The New Jim Crow is one of the book titles for the Navy. So a lot of wokeness is going on in the military. And you're seeing with the installation of the fence around the U.S. Capitol and the installation of the Biden regime, basically you have a woke military junta. Congressman San Nicolas has led the Guam National Guard to the office of Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene after Marjorie Taylor Greene called Guam a foreign land. Of course, Guam is supposedly a U.S. territory. We're supposed to take care of them. So the Guam National Guard was marched to the office of Marjorie Taylor Greene to confront her. It's like we're being governed by a melodramatic ex-girlfriend at this point. I think that, you know, you see Baked Alaska and the Viking Shaman going to the U.S. Capitol with some Trump grandmas to run around. And then we have to hear AOC cry about it. The congressmen are never going to stop crying. We are just becoming a laughingstock on the world stage by these cry bullies who really do not have the emotional maturity to be able to govern the United States, let alone fight a war against China or Russia, which, of course, the Biden administration is blundering us into. Biden's Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin recently ordered every branch of the military to have stand downs, to have a deeper conversation about extremism. Democrat Congresswoman Jackie Speier, chairwoman of the House Armed Services Military Personnel Subcommittee, says that the Biden administration must patrol all recruits on social media for white supremacist associations. Active special forces are being told, do not post Pepe the Frog on social media. And this is finally a wake-up call for so many patriots out there who think that the military is still the guys who stormed the beaches of Normandy and don't realize that the military is now basically the wokest institution in our society. It's as though, you know, SJW college campuses are now representing us in a war. They're all about promoting the girl bosses in military commercials. And Chairman Xi is laughing at this. Putin is laughing at this. Kim Jong-un, who reportedly is not taking Biden's phone calls, is laughing about this. The only people who are not laughing are going to be the U.S. citizens who either get nuked by hostile foreign powers or droned by the lady generals here on domestic soil.
Always a pleasure to have you because you're just always filled with such bright and light theories of optimism. You know, now you got us being nuked. You know, the demasculization, the feminization of America is a big issue, and maybe the laughingstock of the world because we're actually listening to people like Ibram Kendi. Isn't this guy married to a doctor? Doesn't he have like 2 doctorate degrees himself? Weren't both of his parents doctors? Didn't he come from a silver spoon lifestyle of his own? Did he ever work for anything in his life, or is he just taking advantage of millions of dollars as he promotes this falsehood of systemic racism? PC Radio continues in just 60 seconds. Visit Patrick Howley at nationalfile.com.
Kicking off liberal propaganda like an enemy of the Clintons.
Epstein didn't kill himself.
Patriotically Correct Radio with Stu and Rich.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
because you'd be in jail.
Mojo 5-0 Radio.
Oh, man, do I miss that guy. You know, the truth-telling seemed to never have stopped, despite all of the false, fake, fabricated nonsense that you see in the mainstream media, which, by the way, I hope I have convinced you to completely shut off by this point. If you're a regular listener to this program, then you understand that I recognize that that is just part of the continued psyop. I mean, this stuff absolutely should blow your mind, what's going on right now. We're looking at a story out of Concordia University. We're going to get to Edward Woodson to talk about it. Edward Woodson is a former criminal defense attorney. He's an actor. He's a model. He's an entrepreneur, as well as a radio talk show host. And I wanted to bring you on today, Edward, because I saw this story about Concordia University. And in all of their wokeness, they are now for graduation ceremonies, which, by the way, they'll hold remotely, and we'll get to that point. But they are going to have six of them. Do you know why they're going to have six of them? They're going to have six of them so that they can segregate you by race, by color, by ethnic background, by religious beliefs, and by your gender identity, making it so that you won't feel uncomfortable. You may not be approached or assaulted by a violent insurrectionist Trump supporter at your graduation ceremony. Thanks a lot for being here on Patriotically Correct. Again, we always love having you. Your thoughts on Concordia University? Has this level of wokeness, as hard as it is to actually believe that these are the people that we're supposed to look at as critical thinkers, educators, the elite, are now telling us that the way to be the most woke is to go back to segregation. What's next? Are Trump supporters going to have to drink from different water fountains? Are we going to put white people in the back of the bus now? I mean, what's next, Edward?
Look, that's what we're seeing. We're seeing this all over, not just Concordia. Is it Concordia University?
Concordia University,
have the separate,
of course. Yeah, a New York school. I know that's going to blow your mind.
It's separate. Look, it's separate but equal. Have you heard this before? Separate but equal?
No, so this is new.
Basically, so we're going back now, going back in time now to the times of segregation and Jim Crow. This is Jim Crow. This is modern Jim Crow. Think about it. It's exactly what it is.
So at Concordia, now, the events will be hosted. Maybe they should be hosted by the incredibly racist Bill Burr. You see that he's under attack now after hosting the award ceremony, the remote award ceremony. He was making some comment or mispronounced some name of some Latina. I mean, I've mispronounced names all the time. I mean, there are people from other countries that have names that we're not used to with extravagant type spelling that, you know what? Hey, as great of a journalist and truth teller as I am up here with this microphone broadcasting the same thing that everybody else is thinking, I just have the platform to do it. Sometimes we make mistakes. Sometimes those mistakes are inadvertent and 100% accidental and by coincidence. But you know what? I haven't pronounced everybody's name correctly. And as a matter of fact, I've called people the wrong name completely. People make mistakes. But maybe Bill Burr, the incredibly racist Bill Burr, by the way, who's married to a black woman, but in a conversation off the air, you and I were talking about how this makes him even more racist. How's that?
Well, apparently that's the theory. That's part of the critical race theory that we're hearing about, that if you marry a black person, okay, especially if you're a white man and you marry a black woman, what you really are doing is you're the ultimate racist. And according to the theory, you're marrying this black woman because you're taking a slave. This is exactly what was said. And Bill Burr, by the way, Bill Burr is a comedian. He was being self-deprecating
right. When
he was talking about mispronouncing the name because he even said, like, how come I'm doing this? I'm basically giving out the awards for I think it was some specific awards for Latins in a category, I think, for the Grammys.
Yeah.
So he was being self-deprecating, and he was making a joke because he's a comedian.
Yeah.
Hello.
The comedians, the only comedians that are allowed to be funny are those that hold the head of a bleeding and dead, decapitated President Donald Trump, because that's funny. The only comedians that are funny are the ones that for 4 years on late night talk show on these major broadcast networks stood there with these never ending, not funny, funny jokes about President Donald Trump and how racist the bad orange man was and how he had been impeached and all this other. I mean, the stuff wasn't even funny. There's no such thing as a real comedian anymore. And anytime somebody is funny, like let's just take Chad Prather, for example, a friend of this program who's been on the show multiple occasions. Anytime somebody's really funny and points out the obvious things that are going on, because it's my opinion, that's why Seinfeld was such a great show, right? Because it was something that you could relate to. It was something, a show about nothing. And let's be honest, most of our daily lives are filled with a bunch of boring nothing, right?
Exactly.
And so we find it to be actually a little bit humorous. So Bill Burr, you're saying, is the ultimate racist because he's taking a slave. So maybe his kids will only know him as the person who married their mother only to breed some new synthetic blend of some super racist, growing up knowing that their father was really only colonizing and there to impose his white privilege on her for a lifetime. This wokeness thing is just absolutely disgusting. And my question to you as an entrepreneur and as your criminal defense mind here, because I know that it's your job as a criminal defense attorney in a lot of ways to dissect the thinking of somebody, specifically a jury, when you're looking to just impose that little bit of doubt. Well, I have a little bit of doubt about all these theories that are going on. And I got to believe that the general public, by the masses, the majority of people are looking at this, you know, Coca-Cola, Dr. Seuss, the Potato Man, whatever his name is, Mr. Potato Head.
Mr. Potato Head.
Aunt Jemima.
He's a potato.
Yeah. The potato is racist. Aunt Jemima is racist, although be it she now, we had to get rid of her because it's racist to have a black woman. But by the way, she didn't die poor, I don't think. And neither did a lot of these other black people that we talk about that have become extremely successful. We've named them on the show at nauseam. I mean, I could do a whole hour dedicated to all the successful African-American or black people in this country. And a lot of them are the very ones, 60% of the NBA, 40% of the NFL. These are the, they get paid millions of dollars to throw a football and play a kid's game, but they'll be the first ones up there taking a knee, disrespecting the flag and the military that's there to protect it, the brave men and women, blah, blah, blah. We've been on that. But what about this? When is the majority of the public going to say enough is enough? And then what can they do about it?
Well, they're afraid. They're afraid. We're in the midst of a cultural revolution right now. It reminds me of the Cultural Revolution in China from 1966 to 1972 until Mao Zedong died. There was the Cultural Revolution where you had the Red Guards. They'd be running around and they would make people recite from the little red book. They would have to confess their sins and their transgressions.
So they're afraid. But what are they really
exactly
afraid of?
Exactly what we're seeing
of? Now. What exactly is it they're afraid of? Are they afraid of losing their job? Are they afraid of being outcast from certain socio-political groups, from gatherings, from the tea or martini chat that they normally go to on Thursday or Friday nights, or the women's group or the bowling club? I mean, what are they afraid of? Are they going to be outcasted, or maybe is it going to be something more significant? Are they going to be approached by law enforcement and taken out of their homes in restraints and brought to the gulags?
Well, look, I think, again, everyone is afraid. You got corporations that are afraid. So what they're doing is they're kind of making a down payment on their, it's almost like insurance for them, right? Because they don't want BLM, God forbid, to come and burn down their building.
Right.
Or their, and so what they've done is they've made a conscious corporate decision to basically kowtow to this critical race theory. And if you think about it, it's nonsense, complete nonsense, because as a matter of fact, yesterday, and we talked about this a little bit, the show The Talk with Sharon Osbourne, she was basically assailed by two of the cast members. And now the show's on a hiatus because she talked about Piers Morgan and saying that, Piers Morgan's a friend of mine. He's not a racist. And then, you know, basically the two black women on the panel, they ganged up on her and said to her, well, we know that he's racist and misogynist. We don't have any proof of that.
Yeah. And
but,
because
she said, we don't have any receipts of that, but we know it's true.
And because he is a racist and because I say he's a racist, that means that he's a racist. And because I say that he's a racist and that he is a racist without any proof whatsoever, because he's your friend, you are now a racist also. You're guilty by association.
Modern McCarthyism.
This is not only happening on The Talk. This was also on, I think, that, what is that trashy show where those overweight women, what is that called again here now?
The Bachelor?
No, not that one. Joy Behar. What show is that?
Oh, The View.
Yeah, there you go. This woman is here on national television convincing me, or anybody who will listen to this, if this thing is still even on the air, I don't even know, but apparently it was yesterday. She's on here saying that Antifa is just a fictitious idea, that it's not really happening. Has Joy Behar been to Portland? Has Joy Behar been here to Minneapolis,
no.
to the south side of Minneapolis, and watched everything burn? Has she watched businesses that have been brought up by families and owned by families for many, many years that are the staples of the community, the place where, by the way, black and brown people go to get their groceries or maybe have a prescription filled or get diapers or their fruit and milk for their children, can no longer go there because the damn thing was burned to the ground by this fictitious idea? I mean, where do these people get off saying this kind of stuff, and at what point are people just going to turn them off?
Well, here's the thing. You just said, does she not know? No, she doesn't know. She doesn't know because she watches MSNBC. She lives in a bubble. She probably lives in Upper East Side of Manhattan, only talks to people in her social circles that believe the same thing. So think about it. There's a major cognitive dissonance that goes on. And so she is the definition of an elitist that lives in a bubble. And so she doesn't know. She actually doesn't know.
Which brings me to my point here is that these people at Concordia University and these people at these big corporations who are kowtowing, as you so eloquently put it, will these people, can we get to them if they're the elitists? And we're talking now elected representatives as well. We know that these people, grassroots, door knocking, campaigning, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, all these promises, then they get to Washington, D.C. or wherever we send them, whether it's local, state, or federal government. And then these elected representatives get to these places, they become elitist, they become untouchable, they don't answer their phones, their voicemail is full, they don't answer the snail mail, the emails bounce back, all these other things. And then they do something completely other than that. So Joy Behar is a great example of somebody who's an elitist inside of a bubble, but I think the majority of these people that are elected to represent us that go to Washington then become placed in the same bubble, or they become compromised in these backroom deals, infected by the swamp. You know, Washington overtakes them, it snatches up their soul, and now they're gone, too far gone to even bring back. So at this point, have we just come to a point where we're just banging our heads against the wall and we're going to suicide ourselves by repeated concussion? Or is this something that you have an optimistic outlook on, and can we actually overcome it as sensible people who have really had to now physically look ourselves in the mirror and convince ourselves, no, Stu, no, Edward, you guys aren't crazy. This is really going on around you.
Well, I think look, I just had this conversation earlier with somebody about this, and I think we have to come to the conclusion that we're talking about pro wrestling. And that's what it is. It's pro wrestling. And so you've got both sides. It's a uniparty. So there's no difference between Republicans and Democrats now. Think about it. And I suspect that that's been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
So we have a uniparty. And so then you have people arguing back and forth. And really what we're talking about is pro wrestling, because at the end of the day, they're all hanging out. They're all friends. They're yucking it up at our expense.
It's okay. So let's take this to the criminal defense attorney world. Is this what happens with public defenders and county attorneys and state prosecutors and city attorneys? Is there this, well, we're really kind of on the same team here. So I tell you what, you let this guy slide, let this guy plea, give this gal a cop out, and let's really throw the book at this guy. How does that sound? All right, let's go to lunch. I mean, is this actually happening in our criminal justice system as well?
Well, of course it is. Of course it's happening in the criminal justice system, and the criminal justice system is inundated. Think about this. I mean, it's basically a assembly line, right? And so once you're in the system, it's very hard to get out of the system, but they don't want you to get out of the system because they make money from you being in the system. There you go. Exactly. It's all about the Benjamins, right?
This thing is no longer about justice. And, you know, as a defense attorney or a prosecutor or as anybody who has taken that oath and, you know, passed the bar and you're under the thumb of the regulations and, you know, everything is to be above bar, you are all supposed to serve the same blind lady holding the scales. And at some point when that isn't happening, there should be an unwritten code that when you see something like that happening, that you are a mandated whistleblower. However, that's not happening because it would be career suicide, especially if and when the person who's perpetuating the crime happens to wear a black robe, which might be something that you're looking to advance your career into. And so you would never throw a district court judge under the bus, because in a court of law, who in their right mind would ever argue with a district court judge who has an abundance of unilateral authority in that setting?
Well, think about it. It probably goes on in all kinds of professions, right? Police officers, judges, prosecutors. It's just natural, because that's kind of human nature, and that's the way we are,
yeah.
Right?
Want to get into the George Floyd thing here. I only have a couple of minutes left, but I got to pick your brain on this because this is your line of expertise. We haven't seen a whole lot of facts because the actual trial hasn't started. What we've seen is this charading of these potential jurors, the majority of which primary language is not English. They're not from here. They're from other areas of the greater rural Minnesota and outlying areas. I think they're trying to paint the picture here that we've come up with an unbiased jury, somebody who can, you know, effectively articulate the case itself, watch the same footage that we've all seen, and then arrive at some sort of a decision, guilty or not guilty. When the medical examiner has already said, by the way, that this guy died of a fentanyl overdose, he had enough fentanyl and meth in that cocktail in his system that it would have killed three people. The medical examiner's report says that there was no blunt force trauma, there was no injuries to the neck that would be consistent with suffocation, there was nothing from the lateral vascular neck restraint that was used by Derek Chauvin's knee, albeit for 8 hours. Listen, I'm no huge supporter of the tactic that was used. I'm not here defending him. What I'm defending here is our system of due process. And do you believe that there is any chance in hell that no matter what corner of the earth this trial is moved to, can these jurors here, you know, who have a hard time speaking English at all, do they have the mental wherewithal or the understanding of our criminal justice system enough to really make an objective ruling on whether or not this guy is guilty? And do they really understand what beyond a reasonable doubt would mean?
Well, I think that's why they basically overcharged him. Think about it. They're charging him now with second degree, with manslaughter, and third degree.
Yes.
Now, the third degree murder charge is akin to a manslaughter charge. So, and the manslaughter is almost like a negligence, i.e., that you should have, that but for your actions, your negligent actions. And again, I don't know specifically the statute, how it reads in this jurisdiction, but generally speaking, that's, you know, a manslaughter charge. So they're throwing the book at him because they want one of those things to stick. Juries, though, are very unpredictable. Jury trials are unpredictable. I think it's going to be very hard for him to get a fair trial, given the circumstances and given all the pressure to convict. I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
You know, we've spent now the
Would
the
you
vast,
want to be known
time.
As the juror who said, no, he's not guilty? I mean, think about the ramifications that will have for the rest of your life. Your name is going to become discoverable to the general public. Everybody's going to know your address and your phone number. Everybody's going to know where your kids go to school. This thing is already done. This is the psychological operation, folks. This is the PSYOP. He's already been tried, convicted, and executed in the court of public opinion. All they're waiting on is for it to be confirmed by a gavel, which, because of the pressure on anybody with a reasonable, I mean, any human being would feel that pressure. I don't see
right,
how this thing can be fair.
Look at the other high-profile trials that we've gone through. That look at Casey Anthony or look at Trayvon Martin. We were kind of surprised by that outcome. Although,
I think we've become a lot more polarized since then. Would you agree?
Absolutely, no question about it. And that's due to, you know, the hype in the media and the fact that now race has become this quintessential issue that's crept into everything in our culture now, in our society.
It is the
talking
point.
It's going to be very difficult.
Yeah. You can't get around it. Anything that you do has to do with race. If I'm ahead of you in line at the supermarket, I am an absolute vehement racist. There's no question about it. Broadcasting here from my highest pedestal of white privilege and patriotism. Edward Woodson, always a pleasure to have you, and we hope to have you again sometime. We appreciate your articulation, and we'll check back in with you as this George Floyd and Derek Chauvin trial continues. Many say that George Floyd already received justice as the home-invading criminal that was found guilty of holding a gun to a pregnant woman's abdomen. Let's not forget about these things, ladies and gentlemen. These are the people that are on trial, not you. Remember that. More at redvoicemedia.com as Patriotically Correct continues in just 60 seconds.
Twitter blew up. More offensive than a presidential tweet.
Russia, China, Japan, Mexico, all countries will respect us far more, far more than they do under past administrations.
PC Radio with Stu and Rich. Mojo 50 Radio.
Welcoming back 2.6 million of you. Wow, is that a humbling number? iHeartRadio, that is the live broadcast. Just search the station Mojo 50 weekdays, Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. If you don't catch up with us there because of your busy schedule, don't fret, don't frown, don't trip, don't be sad. You can catch up to us anywhere that you find your favorite podcasts, as well as the exploding YouTube and Rumble channels. Remember, the truth always lives at redvoicemedia.com. Across the nation, the unpopular dictatorial mandates and restrictions continue. They're fighting them in California with the recall Newsom efforts. They're fighting them all over the place, including here in my home state of Minnesota. Joining us now is Representative Jeremy Munson from the Minnesota House of Representatives, representing 23B in that state. Now, you, Jeremy, have been a fierce fighter for the liberation of this state, and many of your colleagues are attempting again to stop this peacetime emergency so-called deal that Governor Walz, I refer to as Governor Tim Jung Walz, the dictatorial regime leader here in Minnesota, continues to shut down businesses, limit the amount of family members that we can gather with at the holidays, group sizes, restaurant capacity. He's crippling the state. And you, again, we're over a year now. Welcome to PC Radio, by the way. Thanks for being here. What are you guys doing? I've seen some recent things here in the broadcasts where you guys are trying to stop this. Can it be stopped?
Well, thanks for having me on, Stu. And yeah, I mean, the way that the Emergency Powers Act was written by lawmakers more than a decade ago is it gives the governor the power to declare an emergency for a whole slew of things. But it's really talking about temporary things like fires and floods and chemical spills and industrial accidents. Never in their wildest dreams would they imagine that a governor would try to extend this for such a long period of time. The only way the legislature has the ability to end the emergency and end this unilateral lawmaking authority of the governor is if both the House and the Senate vote to end it. That's what's referred to as a legislative veto, and what the U.S. Supreme Court has found to be unconstitutional, because laws should be written by the legislature and then signed or vetoed by the governor, not the other way around. And so it's really a high bar to try to end this, and especially because we have a majority of Democrats in one body in the Minnesota House. Minnesota is the only legislature in the country where it's divided between Republicans and Democrats, having a majority in each body. So it's going to be almost impossible for Democrats to overrule their governor of the Democratic Party. And so we're really trying other measures. You know, we're putting pressure on the Democrats to try to come around and go against the governor. But we also are trying things through the courts, challenging it in state and federal court. And we've run recall petitions. We have filed articles of impeachment. And we also are working with counties and cities so they can pass resolutions saying that they're not going to enforce the governor's edicts in their local municipality or county.
How long does the governor want this to continue, and why are Democrats supporting this?
Well, the governor now is kicking off his campaign for reelection next year. So we'll see what happens when he goes out to rural Minnesota and gets thrown out of a lot of establishments. And maybe he'll come to his senses. He has loosened the restrictions that he's put on businesses, allowing 75% freedom or 50% freedom. It's not enough. And it also goes to show that there should not be an emergency in effect when the legislature's in session and we can write laws too. But I think he'll keep his emergency powers through the end of Minnesota's legislative session in May so that he can use that as leverage over the Republican-controlled Senate to negotiate deals, because if they don't want to go along with what he wants, he could still unilaterally spend money or write laws. And that gives him extra leverage in negotiating the budget for the next 2 years and everything else that we're doing.
I mean, we're talking about one of the most hypocritical leaders in the union here. First of all, this is the guy who wants, electric cars and solar this and wind that. But yet he drives this 11 mile per gallon truck that he was at the Minnesota drive through state fair in as he canceled the great get together here. That's traditionally the biggest event where Minnesotans gather. When his state was locked down, not a lot of us have a whole lot of extra money laying around, Representative Munson. I mean, mean, the COVID thing has taken us by storm here, and so we don't get to travel. But at the holiday season, you know, Ron DeSantis down in Florida, he has it right. And so where did Governor Walz go? Well, to an open state where he can enjoy his freedom and take his mask off. And, you know, he's over in Wisconsin, reportedly, with his mask off in some bar or saloon or whatever, just really enjoying himself. So rules for thee, but not for me. And he expects that kicking off the campaign right now is going to produce beneficial results. I mean, I guess I don't know how he feels that this is advantageous for his campaign.
Oh, you're certainly right. And I think that with the economic windfall that Minnesota has had with all of these federal dollars coming in to help out local governments and the state, and now looking at getting an additional $4 billion from the feds in taxpayer debt given to us, there's going to be a lot of new programs and growth that the governor is going to try to direct to people that will be supporting him for reelection and not be helping the businesses that have that he's really stomped on the last year.
Yeah,
and that's a large frustration for people.
Specifically, the businesses that burned to the ground by the in-town and out-of-town insurgents, rioters, looters, criminal anarchists, who, by the way, were not wearing masks, the majority of them. Those crowd sizes were definitely over what the governor allows and what the attorney general is enforcing. Now, in Lakeville, Minnesota, there is a bar called Alibi and a restaurant. The owner there kind of took a stand here in a list of, I think, about 100 businesses that were kind of defying this overreaching dictatorial mandate that businesses shut down unconstitutionally. Would you agree that the backbone of the economy, and this is kind of a rhetorical question because I know where you stand on this, but just for the listener's sake here, would you agree that the backbone of the economy is small business?
Well, it certainly is. And that's where we're going to be, you know, getting the next large entrepreneurs too from, you know, that are starting these new businesses. And, you know, what we've seen in Minnesota is if you're a business that has the ability to hire lobbyists to go to St. Paul and fight for handouts in front of small businesses, those businesses have been very successful. And, you know, the Targets of the world and the Amazons and Walmarts and the fast food chains have made, you know, hand over fist money this year, this past year, and small businesses have been crushed.
Yeah.
And it's really about, you know, locking down the capital like we do in Minnesota, where we wrap, you know, 8-foot razor wire around it and prevent the public from coming in, but yet still handed lobbyists access cards to get into the Capitol so they could lobby their legislators.
It's dangerous for me to go get my hair cut in my small barber shop with just me and my barber. It's dangerous for me to go to my local hardware store that's owned by the guy that lives, you know, two neighborhoods away from me, who has literally risked it all and sacrificed everything in his life to keep his hardware store afloat and be a staple in our community. But yet it is safe for me to be stacked nut to butt like cordwood at Walmart or Target or Home Depot or Menards. The hypocrisy is just right out in front of everybody's face. Do you see that as probably the biggest source of frustration amongst Minnesotans and then Americans around the country?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly do. And, you know, part of that too is that at the beginning of this pandemic, the governor was saying, well, we need to trust the science and the CDC is recommending this and that. And now we're finding that the governor is more restrictive than the CDC and the WHO are on their guidelines. And furthermore, we had a, you know, push for, you know, all these cases were being highlighted in the news. How many new cases of COVID were found this today or this week in Minnesota? And that being used to justify the lockdowns. But now what they're saying is, even if you've been tested positive for it, you still need to be vaccinated. And why is that? It's because most of the positive test cases were not actual positives, right? There's so many false positives. But they can't go back and say, well, what we looked at before was the data was wrong and people, you didn't actually have COVID when we told you you did. And when we told you that you had to stay home from your job for 2 weeks, or you just shut your business down and send all your employees home because somebody tested positive that probably wasn't. They can't, you know, they can't use the cases as a justification for locking things down. And then now say all these people that we said had COVID actually didn't and they still have to be vaccinated. So that hypocrisy is really frustrating too.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, on this program, we have gone to great lengths to show the facts behind these PCR tests and the level of unreliability. I mean, if I test you, Jeremy, 6 or 7 times, you're going to test positive eventually. And the inventor of the PCR test, who discredited Fauci in 1993, is now saying, and then the lockdowns, let's talk about that. Factually, statistically, around the country, it shows that states that were open did not exceed states that were locked down in the number of positive cases, in the number of deaths. So the lockdowns are proving to be not effective, but yet we're continuing to do it. So the question is, now, relating to the vaccine, okay, we're going to make this vaccination available for everybody, but then you're not able to do this or this or this or this. So in a virus that boasts a survivability rate of over 99%, and with a vaccination that has an effective rate of, say, around 94%, and not knowing who's positive and who's not, and with the decline of positive cases and hospitalizations in the state of Minnesota, why the push for continued lockdowns? Why the push for the vaccinations, in your opinion?
I mean, I think that this is just seen as a great opportunity to grow government and to expand programs. And while they're at it, picking winners and losers in the economy, one of these big sleeping giants that we haven't addressed is the eviction moratorium. And that's a very serious issue. Landlords, property owners didn't get a big bailout with all the other businesses. But I hear every day from people who have, you know, one or two rental properties and their tenants haven't paid rent for over a year. And they're losing their home, they're losing their rental property, their retirement, and that hasn't been addressed. And if people were 3 months behind last year, you know, and they're a year behind now, they're never catching up.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a serious cost. And then this is actually probably the purest form of the government taking property from people. They're taking property rights away from property owners, and that needs to be addressed. And that's going to be, you know, billions of dollars that the state would be liable for if they're going to make right by all these property owners.
Yeah. We look at the physical stuff about can't go to your favorite restaurant, but those are the types of things right there, like you just mentioned, that a lot of people don't think about. It's devastating to the state of Minnesota and to democratically controlled states across the country. How do people specifically in the state of Minnesota get involved if they've had enough, if they want to voice their opinion, and if they want to take the power back as the people of Minnesota, where it's supposed to be, how do they get involved in this effort to stop the tyrannical efforts of Governor Tim Walz?
Well, I mean, you need to come in and join lawmakers or join one of these outside groups that's really taking a stand against the governor, putting pressure on him. You know, there's a group called North Star Liberty Alliance, Action for Liberty, the Freedom Club. And then, of course, lawmakers themselves are organizing events. There's a Rocks and Cows group in Minnesota. We have a protest scheduled on Sunday outside of Mankato West High School, where the governor used to be a teacher. He's actually giving his state of the state address from his classroom hiding in Mankato West High School. Mm-hmm. And so it's probably kind of half state of the state address and half kicking off his reelection campaign. But we want people to show up and make their voice heard, because the governor needs to end the emergency and restore the balance of power to restore the legislature as a co-equal branch of government, as our Constitution requires, and give up his his unilateral lawmaking authority.
Yeah, it's called checks and balances. It's what the founding fathers of this country had in mind when they set up all of these different branches of government. We support your efforts, and thanks a lot for being here. Jeremy Munson, Minnesota House of Representatives. More of the powerful conversation continues as PC Radio continues in just 60 seconds. My name is Stu Peters. Go nowhere.
PC Radio.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Joe, 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 it's time to go, go, go. You're just so status quo.
Oh, man.
The PC Radio Show with Stu and Rich.
Hey, don't forget to check us out at Mojo 50 Radio. That is the iHeart station that broadcasts us live every single day. I wanted to end today's show by telling you that today I appeared on Alex Jones's show on InfoWars. And I have received both positive and negative feedback about that. Now, the negative feedback is what I would like to address. Everybody says, well, don't trust Alex Jones. Well, he bailed on Q and blah, 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 and this and that. Listen. No matter what you believe in, and I want you to know that I follow nobody. I don't follow Q. I take all information in. I decide what I believe to be credible information, reliable information. I talk to my family about it. I talk to my kids about it. And I make decisions based on what's best for my life, my household, my family. And the only thing that I follow is God. That is what individual liberty, critical and free, independent thinking and freedom is all about. The platform that Alex Jones has is a massive platform with a huge audience. And whether or not you believe in Alex Jones, my appearance on that program is irrelevant to your beliefs about his platform or him personally. My truth will be told on every platform that gives me the opportunity. And I will never ignore an audience like that to deliver truth and facts, because I will always stand by the idea that I am a voice that just says what everybody else is already thinking. And that's that. So if you like it, great. If not, don't watch it. You have that right as well. Until tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern, here's what's up to it. Here's what's down to it. Here's to any way you can get to it. Here's to those that don't do it. May they be dragged to it, tied to it, or forced to it. And here's to us who do do it, because we're the ones that's used to it. Remember to fly low and avoid that radar. Listen, one day they're going to come for the car, and when they do, save the radio!